Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5.
Yeah, come on!
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a Way Back Wednesday on The Usual Suspects. If you didn't catch it at the end of yesterday, the theme, songs from the year 2005, the last time the Astros were in the World Series that fit the qualifications of songs prior to 2009. We all know they were there in 2017, so slow your roll.
Yeah.
2005. Got it, get it, good. Here we go. Nick, Barry, myself, we're all here, present, accounted for.
What's up, man?
Ready to talk about a whole lot of football. No. Talk about the loss in Game 1.
Pretty depressing.
You know, I'm not, like, pretty depressed. I'm not happy that they didn't win, but they had chances. I mean, it wasn't like they were, like, completely just shut down by Scherzer. You just, you knew at some point Cole wasn't going to have his best stuff or his best game.
Did you, though? Did you really believe that going in?
Because
you didn't say it. You can't come after the fact and say it.
I just didn't feel great about it.
You
I didn't have
to
say it.
Win 3-2 or 3-1.
I did. But that doesn't mean that I didn't have reservations.
If you had them only giving up one run, then you obviously thought Gerrit Cole was going to dominate.
I said what I said. I did have reservations watching the game right from the get-go in the first inning when he got runners in scoring position right off the top. But I had faith that they were going to come back, and I thought that they had done that a couple times. Your boy Yordan finally got a couple of hits.
Except in the biggest moment.
Yeah.
He folded there.
My whole thing is, look, Gerrit Cole was probably due to have a bad game. It's just unfortunate that it happened in Game 1 of the World Series. But at least hopefully, it's out of his system, and you don't have to worry about Cole ever having a bad game.
Well,
ever
I wouldn't
again.
Say ever.
The funny thing is you know, when the Yankee series started, I said, and it was kind of obvious, but all you had to do was win the Verlander and Cole starts, and you're good. I didn't say that in this series because they're up against really good pitching in Strasburg and Scherzer. And so it's not just a given that they're going to walk out there and win. It kind of was against the Yankees. Even though Verlander, they won that start, they didn't win. You know, he didn't get the win. In this case, though, it was a little more concerning for me that you may not win these, but you've got to steal other games. You've got to try to get Strasburg out in the fifth inning this game, or you got to try to run Corbin early, which advantage Astros, you got to see him for innings. So a few guys got to see some pitches off of him. So we'll see if that has a material effect when he gets his start
also
on Friday
their
or Saturday.
Because now It looks like he's game four starter instead of game three.
I was going to say, not that you saw him, it would make sense that they move him to Saturday, but I think still with the day off tomorrow, this could have been his bullpen day, and he could start on regular rest on Friday, but we'll see how that shakes up. A lot of positives from last night, but also a lot of negatives. Also a lot of shoulda, coulda, wouldas. One of the first notes I made that I thought was, I thought that the strike zone was pretty accurate. It was amazingly accurate, especially when you watch where the umpire would line up. He lined up so far inside on the batter that I don't know how he was able to tell that balls off the plate to a right-handed hitter weren't a strike. But he was so accurate.
I disagree with Bregman in particular. I thought Bregman, the rule with giving guys corners is you can give them one, not both. And even on the replays, when I looked at the replays, I thought that he was a bit egregious in giving both corners to Bregman on multiple at-bats, and that one kind of ticked me off. Otherwise, I didn't have a whole – I know some of the
pitchers. He gave the pitcher? He gave Scherzer the corner or gave Bregman the corner?
He gave Scherzer both corners against Bregman on multiple at-bats.
At
now, I saw multiple at-bats where it definitely wasn't within that box,
And when they ran the overhead replay, it wasn't crossing any white of the plate.
I mean, look, he missed a couple, but I thought he called a very consistent game, and I thought he called a very accurate game. I don't know that they keep track of that for umpires, but I'd be willing to bet you his accuracy percentage was one of the better ones in the playoffs so far.
Okay, we agree to disagree, because I just think that there were a lot of – the pitchers were questioning it. Cole didn't seem happy with a lot of calls either. I thought the ones that were really just stuck in my head as one that were really questionable were Bregman at-bats. There were multiple Bregman at-bats that I thought
– I remember one. I don't remember
a guy that has an eye as good as he does at the plate. And he was having discussions on multiple pitches on those at-bats, and I was like,
I don't know. 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts.
But again, he got into 2-0-2 holes because the at-bats I'm talking about was he got into 2-0-2 holes because he gave them both corners.
Well, so. And you're also talking about Max Scherzer. He's pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Greg Maddux used to get those calls off the plate because he would nibble. He would move a fourth of an inch and then another fourth of an inch, and it would kind of fool the umpire's eye. So maybe that's what happened. But for me, that was one of the first things that I noticed was I thought the umpire called a really good, consistent game. Obviously, they miss on a couple here and there, and everybody does. But I also thought that they had a good chance because they made Scherzer work early. But then you looked up, and the pitch count going into the second inning was going into the third inning was almost the same, if I'm not mistaken. I think they both had like 27 or something like that. I'd have to go back and look. But I felt like they got Scherzer's pitch count up early.
They did. He threw 25 in the first inning, and I had tweeted about it going, look, for Gerrit Cole to have the short inning he had, and for Scherzer to not only pitch that many pitches, but give up 2 runs, advantage Astros early. And then somebody's like, well, that tweet didn't age well. I said, advantage Astros early. I didn't say for the rest of the game it was going to go that way. Yeah. But for most of the game, Scherzer had thrown more pitches than Cole.
Yeah.
So, and we had said, look, let's get it to the bullpen where I think it's advantage Astros. And even though they didn't win the game, I think it's pretty safe to say that the Astros were fairly successful. Obviously, they didn't get the key hit with runners in scoring position, but they were successful in putting runners on base in almost every inning. So I think Corbin was the only one. I'm not sure if he had any runners, any traffic. But for the most part, I thought that they did a pretty good job of still giving themselves a chance to win.
Yeah, they got the 2 runs off Scherzer, and then once they got into the bullpen, they got 2 more. But I credit to Martinez. I thought he pulled made some of the right moves, like bringing in Corbin early in the game, which you kind of surprised me, but it ended up being, I think, the right move.
It was.
But
you got to believe they discussed that before the game.
Yeah. Like if we get up early, you got to have game one on the road. So mm-hmm. You bring in a guy that you trust, because I don't think that Martinez trusts a lot of those guys in that bullpen outside of Hudson and Doolittle.
Right.
And I mean, Rainey, for all the stuff that they you know, lauded him for, and you can see with the 100 miles an hour on the slider.
I said, if I could come back with somebody's talent.
But oh man, they were.
That dude's talent to have a 100 mile an hour fastball and his off speed, he's going to be pretty good.
But it doesn't matter if you can't control it.
Well, okay, it's also his first time in the World Series.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying,
but they talked about that was part of his problem.
If I could just have his arm and then work with it, that dude's arm is electric.
Man, I thought I didn't know what was happening. They were all over his stuff. I was like, wow, really? I mean, he's decent, but it's like Dellin Betances. You could throw 105, I don't care, but if you can't hit your spots, it doesn't matter. So that's where I think you'll see the difference is, you know, Corbin, Hudson gave up the one earned run, but Corbin and Hudson and Doolittle combined did pretty well in relief going, 3 2/3, mm-hmm. giving up the one earned run. You'll take that if you're Martinez.
Sure
every single game of the series, you'll take that from your bullpen. You just need Scherzer and company to go at least 5, if not more. Same thing with the Astros. They're going to have to get
Joe Smith
6,
was
7.
Great again.
Yeah, they're going to have to get 6 or 7 out of all their starters.
It's obvious he trusts the 2 guys he went to last night. He trusts Will Harris and he trusts Joe Smith.
Yeah.
And so far, I can't blame him because those guys come in and they have a slow heartbeat. They have confidence. They go and attack hitters. You know, Smith has gotten touched a little bit. He gave up the one home run. But overall, he's come in and done exactly what Hinch has asked him to do. And with the uncertainty of where Presley, I was surprised he was warming up because I was like, well, I wonder how that knee feels.
Yeah, that was interesting.
And then he Osuna. But for the Cole thing, I know a lot of people were saying that they thought Brantley should have caught that ball in left field. I just think the velocity that it had, if that was like a high looping fly ball off the scoreboard, I think he could have lined it up and jumped and tried to catch it.
Yeah, I don't think he would have.
But I don't think he'd have caught that with the way it was, with the trajectory it had, and I don't know what the launch angle was, but it was hit pretty much on a line to where I don't think he could have gotten to it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then the other thing that somebody got after me on Facebook about when I posted was It was the guy I was arguing with about something else. It's the guy that I had to bet with.
Oh, yeah.
And I posted on Facebook just like a little recap where I just said, can't lose Cole starts. That hurts. Can't leave that many men on base. Springer is clutch, which in the World Series, my goodness. I don't know what it is, but he just flips a switch because there he goes again. Another home run, 2 for 3. I put Springer's clutch. Yordan isn't yet. And the Nats need 7 strong every starter of the series. And then what he did is he posted a screenshot of him last night on Twitter saying, so are we just going to act like Springer runs out of the box on that near home run that he hits, that he wouldn't be standing on third with one out? No, you can't assume a triple.
Here's the other thing. Nick and I were talking about it. You got Tucker in front of you, too. And what if he gets caught?
And most of the time, a triple, the ball has to get away. I mean, unless you're talking the fastest person in baseball, and that's not Springer. But that ball would have had to get away. They would have had to chase it down. You can't just assume third base.
And you can't assume that the lead runner is either going to be held up last minute by Pettis, or something's going to happen. He could slip
his ball. Because he tagged.
Yeah, and then you could end up getting an out instead of running yourself out of an inning instead of assuring yourself of still staying in an inning.
He tried to blame that. He tried to blame Springer not hustling out of the box on why the Astros lost, because he should have been on third. I was just like, that's not why they lost. That's not why they lost at all. They lost because Gerrit Cole gave up 5 runs. That's why they lost, period.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt about it. So, I mean, obviously a lot of people have a lot to say about game one, but the bigger deal is now it's a little bit more urgent that they take care of business in game two because they've got 3 straight in D.C. And even though they're confident and they feel like, you know, with Verlander on the mound, they're in a good position, you can't afford to go down 0-2 heading to Washington.
Yeah, that is somebody, I think it was a Correa, I thought somebody tweeted out that Correa already said tonight's game is a must win. Well, yeah, they kind of all are a must-win now, Correa. It's the World Series. You don't just go out and just, we'll just lose a game. You don't do that. You know what else you don't do? You don't go put gas in your car, and you don't go buy food without GetUpside. That's what you don't do, pal. Guys, if you're not using GetUpside, do yourself a favor. Seriously, you're under no obligation to use it if you don't like it, but just try it for me, please. I want you guys to hang on to your money, and that's what GetUpside is going to help you do. So go do yourself a favor. Download it right now out of the iTunes or Google Play Store. It's in the App Store. Put it on your phone. Put in my promo code Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, and then start using it. And it's so easy to use. I have it on my phone, and when I got to fill up gas, I just do like now. I click on GetUpside. I go to the map. I hit gas, and I see what's around me that I can get. Oh, look, 17 cents a gallon cash back at the Shell station right up there at Westheimer and 610. Are you getting 17 cents a gallon cash back? If you're not using GetUpside, you're not. I can promise you that. And the same thing goes for food. You can get up to 35% cash back at hundreds of restaurants around the city of Houston, and I love that they're adding more. I saw recently where they added Sonic and Dunkin' Donuts, and that makes me happy. And they're going to keep adding more, and they keep adding in other cities. So if you travel like me, it's a win-win for you. And who doesn't like hanging on to their money? I know you will. I promise you that. We have listeners with over $500 in their account because they started using GetUpside, and they stay consistent with it. But like I told you, if you don't like it, you don't have to use it. You're not locked in at all. But give it a try for me. Do yourself a favor right now. Go download GetUpside. Put in my promo code Barry. Start getting that cash back. Thank me later.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, present gas included. It's Barry and Joel in the studio. Nick in the production area. All 3 of us present and accounted for. If you haven't seen it yet, Nick put up a picture that looks like I'm about to break wind.
I was thinking you either had to fart or that was when I was giving you the business. And you were like, I hate this guy.
Usually I take 3 or 4.
Do you?
Snapshots.
And that was the best one you got.
This time I only did one. I was just too late.
Like, I see in the corner you looking down at your own genitals.
No, I'm looking at a computer screen.
You're looking at your own genitals?
Yeah, you're looking down to see that they're still there. It looks like you're pulling the waistband of your drawers.
My laptop.
I suggest you probably change the picture, but that's just me.
That's true. It does look like it.
Well, if it makes both of you look bad, I'm all for it.
Even though you look bad?
You really can't see my face in the picture, so it really doesn't.
Thank God.
Yeah, so it's really not a bad picture.
If Barry and I looked our worst, we'd still look better than you. Ooh. So that's simply as just as easy as I can summarize the discussion we just had to come back for segment 2. How about that?
You know what?
Yeah.
You're just mad because there's a pic of you and your bifocals.
I don't like my glasses.
on the.
Yeah, I don't know why they're not bad.
I just don't like them.
They're, you don't. I mean, you it makes you look studious. What's wrong with that? It makes you look smart. You need all the help.
Hello,
you can
my
get.
Name is Myron.
No, you don't look bad in those glasses. Kind of hot. I'd hit it.
Easy now. Maybe I should just try yours that sit over there.
Yeah, I had to take them off of them stupid ass.
If the sun comes from behind you, you can burn bugs.
They ain't that thick. Okay. Are they that thick? Really?
You got a little power to them.
Are they?
I think I grabbed them by mistake one day and went, whoa!
Well, yeah, that's because you don't have to see far away.
Right.
So I have both. I have the reading glasses. I have the progressive lenses. So it starts off with the
glasses. You're a little auto tint away from just being...
Well, they do have this stupid blue light filter. So when you see the light, you see how it's like purple or whatever? Yeah. Can you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that. It takes the vividness out.
I think you should get that kind of automatic tint thing that goes half sunglasses.
Transition
look.
Lenses?
Yeah, those, well, no. You've transitioned in a lot of ways. You might be able to just grab your glasses. Okay.
All right. Now, so, that wasn't nice.
One of the topics we haven't brought up yet was one that I tweeted about last night that we've had some listeners get involved in the discussion already. That catcher's interference call pissed me off.
Yeah, that was a bad... You can't miss something like that. No. Not in the World Series.
And if you missed it behind the plate, someone's got to give you help around the diamond because there's a specific sound, no matter how loud that place is, when you realize that there's contact on something else before it hits the ball. And obviously the result of the way the ball jumps off the bat after that is different. And you either you have to be able to get help, and they can clarify, but that's got to be reviewable because obviously if Fox went to that replay that quickly, and the objective of anything to do with replay or otherwise is to get the call right, that's bad.
But are we going to agree? And I agree with you. It was bad. It should be reviewable. It's not a ball or a strike. It's a matter of should he be on first base or not.
Right.
And I think it should be reviewable. But are we going to also agree that they probably got away with one with Gary Pettis at third base?
He
touched. Yeah, they touched. Like, you're not allowed to touch in any way, shape, or form the base coaches when you're running the bases. And it wasn't much. It's not like it held him up. But even if you brush by the jersey, that's probably by the letter of the law, they touched. So I think they got away with one there, so we'll call it even.
Did you see? So you're saying it was just like the grazing of the jersey?
Yeah. Yeah,
I wasn't 100% sure
now,
if they touched, but obviously you make a good point that, you know, trade-off one than the other one.
Now, what I don't know is there might be in the rule book, because I don't know and I didn't look it up because I didn't care that much, but in baseball, sometimes rules are left for interpretation. So what it might be is the base coach can't, you know,
knowingly or willfully hold up
a player to get them to stop. Now, maybe if they brush each other, it's different. So that might be why. But, yeah, I think it was obvious on the replay that they grazed each other or touched barely. So,
kind of like a shower scene? Or
well,
was it a touch or was it just a graze going by?
It definitely looked like that on the replay. I couldn't see it from center field, but from the replay, it definitely looked like they touched.
Yeah. So I think they, you know, in that regard, they kind of got away with it. But I mean, but you are right. For as good as I thought the umpire called the game, mm-hmm. how you missed that is amazing. You're right there. And I know you heard it. I know you did.
Yep.
Because like you said, it's a very distinct sound. And I don't even know if he made contact on the ball. If read it, because it went straight back. And so if he hit the glove, one of two things happened. He either hit the glove, which caused the glove to go down, so he couldn't catch the ball, and that's why it flew over his shoulder, or he fouled it back, but he hit the glove. So you would have either heard two sounds or just the one sound of the glove if he whiffed on the ball. I don't know how you missed that, but it was obvious.
Yeah, without question. And so, look, here's the thing. Overall, in looking at the game and how I felt after the game, I didn't feel as bad as a lot of people felt on Twitter. And I say that because this could have been a Tanaka start in game one, where you were absolutely shut down offensively. You know, he faced the minimum, even though he gave up a hit. And the bats were just absolutely dead. At least in this case, Jordan got a couple of hits. Springer's obviously heating up. You do have some concern about Bregman in terms of, you know, the over with the strikeouts, which he normally doesn't do. But I, like I said, I think that's one guy that got affected by the calls behind the plate. But overall, I wasn't as disappointed or worried as I was after game one, the way Tanaka shut him down in the ALCS.
I would agree. Yeah, if you lose 5-4 to Max Scherzer is a big difference than losing 7-0 to Tanaka.
And you left the bases loaded late.
Here's where it does worry me, is the fact that Tanaka start was grinky.
Yep.
this start was your ace. This was Gerrit Cole.
Sure.
And that's what's concerning is you kind of had chalked this up as a W. Oh, it's at home. It's Gerrit Cole. It's set up perfectly. Then you go out and lose the game. That's what I think causes the pucker factor for not only us as fans, but also for them. I think they look around that clubhouse and go, ooh. And look, if you saw Soto walking off the field after the game, he just said three more, and they know they just stole one on the road against the best pitcher in baseball. That's got to give them a ton of confidence.
Well, I think he was one of the guys that were – when they lost the first game against the Dodgers, they were like, look, man, we just need to have more fun. I mean, for him to think like that and have that attitude coming – you know, being behind one game against the Dodgers – They're not a scared bunch. But I will say this, Gerrit Cole did not seem that phased, honestly. I felt like he knew he had a bad game. He obviously wasn't happy, but he didn't seem like he was crushed by the situation. The other thing is I think everybody absolutely owned a bad performance. Alex Bregman even said, man, I need to go home and sleep with my bat. I think those guys in a weird way had to show that they were mad, but deep down inside they are a lot more confident than they're showing in postgame.
Well, and then you hear them say, well, we've been there and done this before. We lost game one of the ALCS this year. We lost game one of the World Series last year. Or, I mean, 2 years ago. So we've been there, done that. But the thing is that, you know, this situation, it's just kind of like Gerrit Cole's start. It's inevitable at some point to bite you in the ass. You don't expect it to, and I'm glad that they have all the confidence. It's just that I hope they have the right focus knowing that it's just hyper imperative that they get this game tonight so that we have a long series and they can get back in it by taking care of business in D.C. as opposed to going down 0-2 and really having to fight and claw and scratch and screw with your pitching staff to try and stay in the series.
I think the difference, though, and I hate to be the Debbie Downer because I appreciate all the positivity. I mean, it's great.
No, got to be honest.
But the difference is in 2017 when they lost game one, they went into game two having to face Rich Hill. Mm-hmm. You're going into game two having to face Steven Strasburg. That's a scary proposition. I hope like hell that they tear this dude up and run him out in the second inning. And they put up eight runs or whatever it is. But there's a big difference between Steven Strasburg and Rich Hill going into a game two down
0-1. Just the power alone.
Yeah. And so that's, to me, is why you lost the Cole game. At least you have Verlander on the mound. That's great. But you got to go face Steven Strasburg. Well, and you had Verlander in game two last in 2017.
And the margin for error has been diminished to like microscopic because of the fact that not only with just what you said, but let's just look at the two pitchers where if you'd have said it at the end of the regular season, you'd have said advantage Verlander. But if you look at Verlander's last two starts and he's susceptible to a long ball or two,
yeah,
that could be the difference between you getting a win and a loss in a game you got to get, because Strasburg, who has been susceptible during the course of the regular season and given up some hits and runs, has been absolutely lights out in the playoffs.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
If I'm AJ Hinch, I might even consider moving Alex Bregman into the two spot. I think I might go Bregman. I mean, I think I might go Springer, Bregman, Altuve, because if Springer can get on base as hot as he is, if you have to pitch to Alex Bregman, because they've been pitching around him. He doesn't have a lot of hits in this postseason, but he's been on base a lot. He draws a lot of walks because I don't think they're as scared of what's behind him. But if you have Springer on base and you have Bregman on base, or at least Bregman with Altuve at the plate, you significantly increase your chances of run production from that three.
I would go with that because it's a righty on the hill tonight, too. If it was a lefty, you know, I could go either way. But Brantley, to me, he made good contact last night, so and he's obviously a very calm hitter, but I'm fine moving him down and moving Bregman up.
Well, because I think you trust Brantley no matter who he's facing to hit,
you
right?
Should, yeah.
You're not worried if he's going to walk, he's going to walk, but you don't have to necessarily protect Brantley as much if you can protect the MVP of the American League by putting Jose Altuve behind it.
Yeah, no, I agree. What I was trying to say is if it was a lefty, for sure I would do it. I could go either way because I'm okay moving Brantley down because much as they say he hits lefties well,
yeah,
he hasn't really hit him well in the postseason.
You go either way?
No, that's something you do when you're in the shower with that touch.
Did you hear him say he goes either way?
I did.
I heard him say he goes either way.
Was it a touch?
It was a touch.
Between Pettis and touch you?
Touch here and there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll continue to roll on just a half hour into the three-hour show, so plenty of opportunities for you to join us. H&P Listener Line, 713-780-3776. Call that number, text that number, or hit us on Twitter, at Barry is Funny, at PacManGel with a K, at The Producer Nick. We're the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Telling me.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, rolling through the first hour of the three-hour show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. It's Barry, Nick, and Joel on a way back Wednesday. Barry with his list in 1.3 minutes after the show ended yesterday has hour number one of songs from 2005. Yep.
But it was a good year.
Not the first time he's heard that, by the way. It was quick, but...
Oh, well done.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
It's going to be one of those days. It started that way, so we might as well keep it going. You're next, Nick.
Barry is still recovering from the food he ate. You had a late lunch. Normally
he's still
you have,
eating.
He's still eating.
Oh. The whole studio smells like
you're
it,
not
too.
Supposed
it pisses
to eat
me off.
In segments, sir.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's not professional. And people
you
can
mean
see
like
you.
Burping on the, during segments, too, isn't professional?
Well, I guess
I'm
when
not
you're
saying anything about uh-huh. that because he's the
I guess
boss
when you're
man.
The big wig, yeah, you can get away with doing that. Well, he was doing that before.
I was
going to
say,
yeah. Because you could see John bringing down the hammer.
It's not like he just started doing that.
Right. Yeah. AJ, you stop that right now. Okay.
Remind me to never put money on a baseball game ever
again.
All
right, don't put money on the baseball
game.
You
bet on the game last night?
I did. I probably should have talked to Jerry Bowes. Jerry Bo knows.
He's not a speaker. He's a guy. Bowes is a speaker.
Jerry. Oh, yeah, Bowes. Those are nice speakers.
Yes, they are.
What kind of speaker is he? Is he a... What'd you call it?
It's a 6x9.
No.
Jerry Bo knows.
A woofer? What was it?
A woofer.
He called it a woofer.
A woofer. Get it straight, bro.
Yeah. Is he a woofer?
No, I took the under 6.5 runs, and I'm never going to bet on baseball ever again.
Two things I wouldn't bet on if I were you.
And I've heard this from multiple people. What's the other thing? For one, is obviously, but why? Back in the day, not so much, though, right? It was easier to predict back in the day.
No matter what.
I made money back in the day.
Listen. Everybody's got a button. Everybody can get caught slipping. It's an individual sport. You don't have insight into training camps. You only get what they tell you. I would never bet on MMA. There's very few sure things.
Okay. I mean, I don't really normally bet on MMA anyway.
What were you gonna say? Basketball?
No, normally it's football, man.
Oh,
or
no, I'm saying
basketball.
What were you gonna say? What was the other one people tell you not to bet on?
It's baseball and no, I was asking you because I knew one of them was baseball.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to list one as baseball because I've heard that from multiple people.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet
I haven't
on baseball.
Heard many people say stay away from MMA, though.
That's just me. I don't trust, especially as much as I covered it. And you know, on the website, every time Legacy would have a fight or Fury would have a fight, we'd have a local fight, we would go through and all of our experts, me and AJ and a whole bunch of other, Richard Burmaster and all these so-called,
back in the day.
Yeah, all these so-called experts, we'd pick the fights. Rarely did we pick them right if it was even somewhat close.
Kind of like your football picture.
Right? It's all right. You don't make me get my record out, jerk.
Can we just talk about last
spreadsheet.
Week? Can we just talk about
that's
last week?
That's all you want to talk about is what my one bad
You started
week.
It first segment. I'm bringing it back.
Wow. You just went full on eighth grader on me. Yep. You started. No,
right.
I was 5-9 last week, all right?
And I'm but taking let's talk your lunch
about,
money.
Let's talk about 9-5 this week, huh? Who turned it around in his 500?
This week hasn't been played yet.
Week 7. You know what the hell I meant.
Let's just keep doing this. How's our fantasy leagues going?
Oh.
How bad are you?
Oh, my God.
Is it bad?
My Twin Peaks fantasy league has pissed me off to the highest degree. I've lost two games each by 1 point. I was killing the guy I was playing this week going into the Cowboy-Eagle game. And I forget who he had on the Cowboys, but all of a sudden it was like, and I looked at it, I'm like, oh, it's going to be close. I get up the next morning, I look at it. No, you lost by a point.
Well, that's what
that sucks. I think I'm thinking I'm like
when you lose by a fraction of a point, I think that's worse.
Well, okay, it's close. So I lost by a point twice, and I think I'm either 4-3 or 3-4.
Let's see. The Spring Stallions are 4-3, tied for first in the West.
Way to go!
Yeah,
nice job,
killing it.
Yeah,
I'm on a one game losing streak. Translate
it to picks. You're going to be great.
That now there are two teams in the East that are 5-2. What's that? That's not from me.
There's a whole bunch of stuff I don't know. It looks like a science project
There's,
on this.
Man, list. The whole East in our division is 5-2, 5-2, and the bottom 3 or 4-3. Our division is weak.
And how are you doing, Nicholas?
I am 5-2.
Wow.
I am definitely the...
And what are you, Joel? You're 3-4?
3-4, I think. Yeah, I'll check it right now. That's right.
I don't know how long it's going to last.
Again, it's kind of like getting ranked number one in college football right now. It doesn't matter. It's how you finish at the end of the year. So bring that to me at the end of the year, bitch. How about that? So, Nick, you were at the game last night.
I was.
I'm curious, and the reason why is because I've seen a quote now from Jeff Luhnow. I know that A.J. Hinch had some pretty strong comments before the game yesterday in regards to the Sports Illustrated article and what was said or not said by the assistant GM in the locker room after Game 6. But Jeff Luhnow then followed that up with a comment that Chandler Rome had that said, what we really don't know is the intent behind the inappropriate comments he made. We may never know that because the person who said them and the people who heard them, at least to this point, have different perspectives. Major League Baseball has said that they are going to continue to investigate. I don't know. Was it an undercurrent leading into the game last night, Nick?
It was, but obviously I missed that press conference. I mean, I can't reveal who I did talk. I did talk to people. Mm-hmm. Call it my sources if you want.
Sure, sure.
And the vibe that I'm getting from the people I spoke to is that your old boy might have been a few in.
Brandon Taubman, the assistant GM.
The assistant GM might have been a few drinks in. I don't know if that's true or not. Allegedly, he was, under the influence. The other thing is, we heard Ben Ryder, who we've had on this program. Yep. He was on Charlie Polillo's program yesterday. And he knows Stephanie, the reporter who made the Sports Illustrated article. And he says, I have no reason to, and I talked to him before the game, but he said this on the Charlie Polillo show, I have no reason to doubt Stephanie. She's a good reporter. There's no reason why she would make up that story.
To me, it's not about, saying whether he did or didn't do it. Obviously, something happened. But I think that, and I go back to what I said yesterday, for me, the hole in this is that why would he just turn to three female reporters randomly and blurt that out? That's odd behavior at best.
Yeah. Now, I said
alcohol,
to you yesterday,
alcohol could be a partial explanation of that.
That's true. But with the intent, I don't know.
The other thing that I said to
why
you
would you
from
do
my
that
own
with a guy that crapped the bed in that game? That's the part to me that doesn't make sense.
Organizations are very anal about stuff. And stuff that we would think is minute details that just need to be swept under the rug. They keep literally notes and charts about who's written what negativity about them, who has been against, quote unquote, against them in some way, shape, or form. They keep a scoreboard. Let's just put it that way.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'm not trying to be cantankerous. I'm asking an honest question. Do you think that all organizations do that, or just one or two in particular that you have experience with?
I think that it's becoming more and more prevalent as a theme across organizations.
So we won't mention any previous employers.
Oh, I can't. I don't mind saying.
Okay. So it happened at the Rockets, correct?
But it happened over different eras too. This is why I think it's become more prevalent. Oh yeah. In Portland, there were still stacks of articles every day. This was before the internet and social media was a big thing. They would literally give you a Sears catalog every day of articles about the team.
And you would have to read them and then hold a grudge against those people?
No, you could use them as a resource to keep you updated on what's being said about the team. Mm-hmm. But the key departments were using them for more than that. They were using them as a scoreboard.
Interesting.
And the other reason why I say that is because Van Gundy started this, where every day he wanted, because I told you guys this, he didn't like confrontations a whole lot, but he did like to deliver messages through the media from time to time. But he always wanted to know what was being said. So there was literally a massive stack of papers delivered to lots of people in the organization on a daily basis of different columns and things that were out there, including blogs and other things. It carried over to Kevin McHale and his tenure. McHale didn't give a rat's ass because, he's old school. He's like, I don't care. Everybody can write whatever they want. I know what's going on with my team. But it didn't stop the organization from keeping tabs.
I'm not trying to be combative either. I just think it's a common sense thing to do. And how about this? Maybe let me give you another example. Y'all, Tyrann Mathieu, right?
Yep.
He was a good player. What was his problem coming out of LSU? The guy couldn't stop smoking weed.
Right.
He kept getting caught over and over and over again. So if you're a guy that employs that guy on your roster, if you're a general manager or if you're a coach and you're looking past that history because you know he's good, and perhaps Tyrann Mathieu is turning things around. And all indications, it did take a while. He eventually turned things around, and he stopped getting caught with that. But once you have a player on that roster, that's when the red flags go out, and you start looking who's covering you. That might be, I don't know, someone against marijuana or against drugs or labels marijuana as drugs. And is very passionate of a fight against drugs. I think that's a common sense approach. Now, whether or not the assistant general manager or the general manager Lunau did that, I'm not sure. I just feel like, I mean, you know that it's happened at the Rockets. I just feel like it's almost, I hate to say it, it's just dumb if you don't know if there's a reporter who's very passionate about domestic violence is there, considering you have Osuna on the roster. That's all I'm saying.
For instance, and I feel bad for her, but Jenny Dal Creech has been very passionate in covering the Baylor situation.
Sure.
So when all of this happened, she was, both on social media and otherwise, putting her opinions out there, and she got a lot of backlash. And she basically, before the game last night, said, if you're going to continue to do this, just don't follow me. Just don't follow me. I don't want to hear it anymore because I'm going to have my opinions. You're going to have yours. And I give her credit for doing that. But there's someone, to your point, Nick, where as an organization, you say, I'm very aware of the fact that Jenny has covered this and done this and been passionate about this.
Sure. I think you know that. I think there's no way they don't know that, in my opinion. It's considering how long she's been at the Chronicle. And Barry said, look, they probably have they're probably keeping up with someone like a Jenny Dal Creech, right? Or Allison Footer or Brian McTaggart. You said that on the air yesterday.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised. Like, I'm almost positive, 100% sure that they know Jenny is passionate about that. But I think that's in general. I think that's an updated process. I think that's something you have to keep up all the time. If you have a person that has a history of domestic violence on your roster or got off of a case, you better be in tune to who's covering you and who's passionate about that. If it's someone that with drugs, if it's someone that has problems with guns, all those things should be considered, in my opinion, if you're in the front office. That's just my personal opinion.
At best, it's just absolutely bizarre behavior. And at its worst, it was doing exactly what the article in Sports Illustrated implied that he was doing, which was rubbing it in the face of somebody who was, you know, either passionate or affected by domestic violence based on the wearing the purple bracelet. I feel like there's probably some truth on both sides, and it's somewhere in between.
I think that's what we always say. The truth lies somewhere in the middle.
It usually does. Yeah. And I mean, we don't. The problem is we just don't have enough information, so you just go on what you're told. And for me, I'm not doubting that it didn't happen. What I'm doubting is the motive. I think he did it, and I think the Astros' original statement was handled poorly, and I think his statement seemed eh.
Well, that was basically, yeah, and I actually agree with that. Like, here's the deal. What the Astros look like right now is a team that denied it because they literally said you fabricated a story, and now it looks like they're kind of admitting it. It's a bad look on the Astros.
I said it yesterday going in. The Astros should have said nothing at all until they had all their ducks in a row and did their due diligence they did when they made the trade for Osuna. Because unless you absolutely knew without a shadow of a doubt how it went down, you really can make yourself look foolish by doing what they did and made a premature statement and then have to pay the price when facts are coming out.
Yeah. What sucks is that this is a really awesome team. And for the most part, you don't...
Full of great dudes.
Yeah.
Awesome dudes.
Yep.
And it just sucks that the assistant GM put them in this conversation. Regardless if he meant to do it or it was like... You shouldn't have acted like that. You shouldn't have said something like that in that dynamic. And they're trying to win a World Series. Don't throw this distraction on the plate.
It's a great point. I know we got to go to break, so we can answer it when we get back. But since you bring that up, since he's the one that did this, do you fire him? We can answer that on the other side.
There you go. So we got more to talk about there leading into Game 2 tonight as you get Steven Strasburg and Justin Verlander with the Astros down 0-1 at the Minute Maid Park Field, because if anybody else keeps calling it a juice box, especially people new to H-Town, it's going to annoy me even further. Local news, take note. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Rolling through the first hour of the three-hour show, it's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. If you're just tuning in, we were recapping Game 1 of the World Series and talking about the fact that now Jeff Lunau has made a statement. A.J. Hinch made a statement before the game, and more details are trickling in terms of all of what went down with the assistant general manager of the Astros, the comments made after Game 6, the female reporters that were within earshot, and such. So, Barry, you took us to break with a question that is definitely worth discussing. So, once you...
Yeah, I was just saying, you know, with all of these distractions and... The bad look, the fact that this is tied to Osuna in some way, and you know they managed to somehow navigate that PR nightmare, and not necessarily, I'm not suggesting they swept it under the rug, but they managed to avoid any major you know egg on their face from this until now, and now it's bringing that back up and everything else. Do y'all think that he gets fired? Do you think he makes it through the World Series? Do you think he's the assistant GM next year? How about that?
It's for me. Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Nick. Go ahead.
No, my whole thing is, what is the MLB investigation going to turn out? And I think it's highly dependent on that. And if they find any, like, seriously incriminating or bad details on the assistant GM in this situation, I think it could be bad news. At the same time, he's a young 27-year-old man. Apparently, I saw Jake Asman tweet out. He went to the same high school that Jake Asman went. So he's 27 years old, and he's the assistant general manager of the Houston Astros. So obviously, he's a smart young dude who came up relatively quickly when you consider the position that he's in right now. How important he is to general manager Lunau, I really don't know. And if he's super important and he wants him around, I imagine they're going to do the best that they can to keep him on this team. But in the event that the MLB investigation reveals something so bad to the point where it's just a terrible look, I can see him firing him. It just depends on the situation. I think it's highly dependent on the MLB investigation. And all they said is that they're going to investigate. There's no details that's been revealed yet. So
in my opinion, Daryl Morey survived an international fiasco. And he did not get fired. We don't know if he was reprimanded or not. But I think in this case, I think because if you look at past precedents and say Daryl didn't get fired and that was that big of a deal, this is a big deal too. But I don't think I think unless the organization has some reason that they were looking for, or they also know that a lot of Luno's staff is going to be highly sought after as they've been in previous off seasons because of their analytic experience and the success that the baseball operations staff has had from the Astros. But with all those things being considered, I can see him being reprimanded. I don't think he'll get fired.
Okay. I kind of think he will.
Really?
Yeah. I think after and the reason why is I think that they realized the mistake that they made with their initial response. Because I think what you said was probably the best way to handle it. Just wait.
Yep.
We'll issue once we have all the facts and we'll do an investigation and we'll issue a statement at the appropriate time. But instead they immediately had his back, right, wrong, or indifferent. And then it's a bad look when he comes back out and says what he says. And it really looks bad when A.J. Hinch goes to the podium and says the complete opposite, which was, it's embarrassing, we need to be better. He didn't back up the Astros statement. He didn't back up the assistant GM statement. He basically came out and said, we got to be better. We got to do better. Sure. Almost admitting that.
And saying that can't happen in their clubhouse.
Right. And look, again, I don't think I absolutely think it happened. I just don't know the circumstances around it. All we can do. But I think because A.J. Hinch came out and said what he said, he's a very important man in that front office. And, you know, I realize Jeff Luno has a lot of pull, but so does A.J. Hinch.
So are you saying basically he's going to be the scapegoat for the entire situation because they put the statement out, this Brandon Thomas?
Yeah. He's not the scapegoat. He's the cause.
Because this
he's not going to be the scapegoat. He's the cause.
But I'm saying he also becomes the scapegoat of an organization going, we probably shouldn't have put that statement out as early as we did.
Well, I think that that's a separate issue. They probably fire their PR firm or whoever made that PR decision. But I think that he, because of what he did and the fact that A.J. Hinch came out and said what he said, and I'm sure the players are like, yeah, that's uncalled for, man. That's inappropriate. We don't need that. There's, you know, they're friends with – I'm sure some of these reporters, they're friends with the Julie Moraleses of the world. Mm-hmm. They're friends with a lot of these people, and they don't want that in the clubhouse.
Sure, they you don't.
Know, they're held to that standard.
It's an embarrassment for everybody that works for that team.
Let's be real. If Josh Reddick would have been the one, and I'm just using his name just because he's crazy, but if Josh Reddick would have been the one that was accused of doing this, there'd be hell to pay. You can't let an assistant GM get away with it.
Sure, and I think that the reason why it's a plausible outcome is because – this Osuna was a calculated risk.
Mm-hmm.
They went in there saying, all right, we're going to get some backlash, but we're getting him out of deal. He's a good player. We're going to handle this. This is completely not anticipated by the Houston Astros. So that's the reason why I tend to want to wait for more details to come out. But I can totally see him being fired because this is not something that they were expecting. This is something that's been thrown on their plate in the middle of a World Series.
Yeah. I can say this. If they lose the World Series, the chances are that he could get fired goes way up.
Yeah.
Because if this becomes a distraction and then they lose the series, now they're going to have the red ass going on 150 degrees.
Yep.
So that's something to keep an eye on too, because you know, and like I said to you guys, I mean, the big thing is the NBA is very much ahead of a lot of different things in the way they do business. And one of the things that they were way out ahead of the game on was making sure that everybody in their organization, in their organizations, got media training. And when you get media training and you're trained about how to speak publicly and just, you know, what you say can be used against you and to be aware of your surroundings at all times, it pays, no matter what you had to pay to have that person come in, it pays dividends tenfold for just situations like this. And you said what PR firm. Most teams' PR staff is in-house.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a long-time PR guy that's been there through a lot. And I don't know if they have a business PR person too, or if it's just the staff that we're familiar with that work the games. But just like when the Rockets were in Japan, and one of their PR people that works for the team decided to cut off the CNN reporter and make a bigger deal out of what was already a huge issue, and the NBA had to issue a statement of an apology, they're not going to lose their job, but you damn well better believe they're going to hear about it.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to be warned to never do that again. Yeah. Because if you do, it's obviously not just something that affects you. It's affecting the entire league and your country as it comes to dealing with another country.
I think that's the big reason. Well, that's not. But I think the big reason that this guy gets fired is simply because they had dodged the bullet, so to speak. They went out and made this risky trade and managed somehow to not look, even though people, you know, were upset about it initially. We did. I think a lot of people did. Then you got some of the facts, and then it was not dismissed, but it basically she didn't go back and testify, so he was put on what amounts to the probation in the U.S. They dodged a bullet, so to speak, and now this is outside of Osuna actually doing something and committing an act of domestic violence. This is one of the worst things that could happen for him, is them flaunting it in a group of reporters, if that were the case.
And the timing couldn't have been worse with the World Series. So and with the national media all in town because of it. So now it gets magnified a lot quicker.
Oh, yeah.
You know what else is going to get magnified a lot quicker? The fact that the NBA season started last night and your Rockets take the court for the first time tomorrow night. And, oh, what a matchup do we have for opening night. It's the Rockets and the Bucks, the Greek Freak and the Beard. And if you want to throw Westbrook in there, the last three MVPs all on the court at the same time in Toyota Center. Why wouldn't you want to be there? Nuff said. Then the Pelicans Saturday night, October the 26th. And finally, the homestand ends with the return of CP3 as he takes on his buddy, James Harden. And CP3 and Russell Westbrook go head-to-head. It's going to be intense, and you're going to want to be there. Three great games to open up the season at home. Why don't you go to one or more and check all the available games before they sell out? Tickets are going fast, so get to Rockets.com because you don't want to miss a single minute of the action for any one of these first three big games. You got the Bucks on Thursday night, you got the Pelicans on Saturday, and CP3 and the Thunder on Monday. All great games, all at Toyota Center, all with tickets still available. Rockets.com, don't miss your chance.